couple, this testimony strongly supports the adoption of the plan with the following comments and conditions regarding specific aspects of livability as they apply to the West Quadrant neighborhoods. Mayor, in your State of the City address and in yesterday's OPB interview, you mentioned height, bulk, and setbacks as important qualities of that compatibility. Today, I'd like to address briefly the notion of compatibility and the provision of housing and supportive amenities for genuinely diverse neighborhoods. Excuse me. First of all, livability depends on the making of good neighborhoods. Neighborhoods require support services. Space has not been set aside for public amenities, particularly those for children. This includes parks, schools, and community centers. Reinserting specific language struck from number 17 on page 43 of chapter 4, housing in neighborhoods, would directly support the necessity of family amenities. I'm going to read this a little bit. It'll just take a sec here. It's number 17, housing diversity. Create attractive, dense, high-quality, affordable housing throughout the central city that accommodates a broad range of needs, preferences, and financial capability in terms of different types, tenures, size, costs, and locations. That's great. Here's the sentence that was struck, which would actually greatly increase the impact of housing policy on the city, especially the West Quadrant. Provide a more diverse stock of housing to support a diversifying central city population that includes housing compatible with the needs of families with children, people with special needs, students, seniors, and the central city workforce. I believe that this is important language simply because it deals with more than the simplicity, overly simple aspect of providing so many units of affordable housing. It deals with size. It deals with family type. Adoption of this language puts strength behind the adoption of public amenities that are essential for the making of a good neighborhood. The other really has to do with the issues of height and bulk that impact the entire neighborhoods, entire quadrant. Policy that limits sprawl and encourages strategic and effective density can help maintain an increased livability. Considerable concerns regarding the ability of new tall buildings to meet complex requirements of the urban and global environment persist and grow. Land use policy that supports that is certainly possible. We need not acquiesce to the allure and questionable value of new tall buildings. With that, I thank you for your stewardship and forward thinking on behalf of us all. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Appreciate your comments as always. Thank you.
Next three are Dwayne Betts, Dan Petrosians, and Fred Leeson.
We're asking a lot of Carla. We asked her to introduce Dan Petrosich after John Sarnecki. You know, that's a mouthful.
Think Wroblewski or something.
Oh, that's good. We'll go with Wendy Chung.
No foul needed.
And Mary Zarnecki.
Go ahead, Dan.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Dan Petrosich. I was a member of the West Quadrant Stakeholders Advisory Committee as the representative for the Portland Business Alliance. I support adoption of the West Quadrant Plan. The plan is the culmination of 5 years of work by city staff and was well vetted by many Portland residents and business owners. I'd like to talk about two aspects of the plan today, flexible zoning and height limits. Flexible zoning is not controversial and is a big part of the plan, but the city's learned from experience is that you get more and better development with flexible zoning compared to single-use zoning, i.e. just residential or just commercial. More and better development with a 10-minute neighborhood that you can walk, work, and play in. The Pearl District is proof of how flexible zoning works very successfully. You get more of everything. More residential than a residential-only zoning, more commercial and more retail services. There's been more residential in the last 10 years in the Pearl District than any RX zone. There's been more office built in the Pearl than in the downtown commercial code zone. I'd also like to talk for a moment about building heights in the West Quadrant plan. With the urban growth boundary, it's been the policy for the last 40 years to grow up and not out. Portland's by far the shortest city on the West Coast. Seattle's tallest building is 943 feet. San Francisco's is 850. Los Angeles, 1,150. We have only two buildings that are over 500 feet. We have only four buildings, including those two, that are over 400 feet. So we're not a tall city at all by any means. The other thing I'd like to back up Ron Paul on is that at the Morrison Bridgehead, there's virtually no way to use the existing density that's there at the bridgehead without a height increase. It's just not possible. Building up and not out provides for better, slimmer buildings with more natural light and air for its neighbors. I support adoption of the plan as recommended by the vast majority of the stakeholders. The other thing I'd like to point out, I heard a lot about World Cities Club, and thanks to the internet and the devices I carry, I was able to do a little research. We're in no danger of joining the World Cities Club. Let me explain. Our entire office market of 25 million or so square feet could fit. It would take seven World Trade Center buildings to fit our entire market into. So you kind of put it in perspective, we're a suburb compared to some of these world city that were mentioned earlier. You know, Singapore's got, I checked, building height, 919 feet. Hong Kong, 1,588 feet. Vancouver, B.C., 659 square feet, not square feet. Dubai, 2,500. New York, 1,776. We're just never going to be a World Cities Club. We're Portland. So,
thank you. Anyway. So let me make sure I understand your point about the bridgehead, that because of the limitations of the site, there's floor area ratio there that's just never going to get used unless you have more height.
Is that's that right? Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening. Mayor, commissioners. Carl, I have my...
Is there a PowerPoint there?
There is.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for your service to the city and for letting me speak today. I'm Wendy Chung, and I live at 1729 Northwest Irving. I'm not an architect. I'm not a planner. I don't even live in the West End, but I'm testifying today because I work in the West End as a corporate lawyer. I've worked in business for 20 years. I have an MBA, so I'm not opposed to business. I do, however, walk through the West End. I have two children, one who attends Lincoln High School in the West End and one who's in college at University of Oregon. And I'm testifying because I care deeply about historic preservation, and I care also about economic vitality of the city in which we live. I'm also here to endorse the Minority Report and the Historic Landmarks Commission letter to the BPS recommending strategic reconsideration of building heights in the West Quadrant. So here's the height map for the West Quadrant. You've seen this. And you'll see the 460-foot heights that we've all been talking about throughout this meeting. Just by way of point of reference, the Galleria is 63 feet tall. The Central Library is 38 feet tall. The Crystal Ballroom is 50 feet tall. There are dozens of other significant low- to medium-rise buildings in the West End that are not protected under the code. Commissioner Fish asked for a list of gems. He doesn't need a list. There's a multi-property listing of historic properties within the downtown area that aren't historic landmarks that are on this chart that Joe Zender presented, but that are at risk because they could be demolished without a Type 4 review. The other thing I'd point out is over 100 feet doesn't necessarily equate to 350 or 460 feet. In fact, this building right here, the Elliott, is 266 feet, just to give you a frame of reference. Mayor Hales identified three key priorities for Portland in his recent State of the City address: neighborhoods, economic opportunity, and public safety. Strategically managing building heights in the West End addresses the first two. The National Trust recently issued this report on how smaller buildings and older neighborhoods contribute to urban vitality, confirming that what Jane Jacobs said more than 50 years ago continues to bear out today. Interestingly, the previous testifier talked about San Francisco and Seattle. The three cities they evaluated were Washington, D.C., San Francisco, and Seattle. And they assessed them against 40 economic, social, cultural, and environmental performance metrics. This is what they found. First, among other things, that older districts provide affordable space for entrepreneurs of all backgrounds, and that older, smaller buildings promote a strong local economy. There are nearly 40% more jobs per square foot and more than double the number of women and minority-owned businesses in older parts of Seattle than in the newer districts. Other studies reach similar conclusions. I grew up working in a family-owned immigrant business that would not have existed but for the availability of affordable commercial space. We see the blossoming local economy in the West End today with its many eclectic independent shops that draw visitors from near and far. But as Commissioner Fish talked about market forces, the excessive height headroom motivates large-scale development in this area that threatens to destroy the very thing that makes it so desirable. If we're not building point towers and the zoning is already at 460 feet, what's the harm in lowering them? The comp plan gives us a once-in-a-generation opportunity to preserve valuable historic resources and to promote continued economic growth in this special part of our city. Please, before you vote to adopt the West Quadrant Plan, consider strategic reconsideration of the height policy in the West End, as has been proposed elsewhere. I also want to add, if I may, just for a second, the one thing that others testified about were bonuses that for height that would add or contribute to the community. One thing I would ask, and I raised this in meetings with BPS during the West Quadrant Plan process, why not offer some sort of a bonus for cultural revitalization of Chinatown? There are no Chinese people in Chinatown. And I don't see, I understand about it motivating affordable housing. I'm all for that. But can we not also inspire Ouija Maya or other Chinese or Japanese businesses to come back to Chinatown, maybe through a bonus program? I'll just throw that out there. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Mary.
Hello, Mayor, Commissioners. Mary Zarnicki, New Traditional Architecture. We practice preservation, architecture, and urbanism. We believe that they should be one entity. I'm really happy to see the city explore all these pieces together. The one example I would like to bring out is the city of Vancouver as a model. We had the opportunity to take students from Mexico up to Vancouver, and we saw the downtown as a place that is aging high-rises and brand-new high-rises. But in contrast to that, we were able to go outside of the downtown, new neighborhoods that the premier planner and urbanist Patrick Condon has taken neighborhoods that have, their challenge was to double the density, and they did that with strategic planning, and they did that with infill and, you know, other kinds of ways to add low-scale density and mid-rise density on the main streets. In addition, a half-mile new streetcar system that would be less expensive than the subway system, so that that kind of approach to deal with the carbon issue and the flat city is really a great model for Portland to understand and to continue its heritage, appreciation, and great livable place that we are, Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Okay.
Some others? Was there a Stefan Lewis? I don't know if I called his name or not. Thank you. Okay, the next three are Nolan Leinhart, Peggy Moretti, and Roger Leachman.
Okay.
And then the last three who signed up were Timothy Moore, Jim Winkler, and Simon Jaworski.
At least a couple of them are here. So, Nolan, I think you're on next.
Great. Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Nolan Leinhart, and I live in the Pearl District. I walk to work in the West End, where I'm Director of Planning and Urban Design at ZGF Architects. I'm also currently serving as Board President for 1000 Friends of Oregon, but I speak tonight only for myself. I'm here because I was fortunate to be a member of the West Quadrant Stakeholder Advisory Committee, and I support the West Quadrant Plan recommendations. This was my first time serving on a stakeholder committee with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I found it to be a robust conversation with a diverse range of stakeholders. In my work, I'm engaged with major district planning projects in Denver, San Francisco, and Vancouver, BC, among other cities, Yesterday, my colleagues and I hosted a delegation from China, and Friday we are hosting clients from Tokyo. These cities seek planning expertise from Portland, not because of the ambition of our plans, but because of the proven outcomes, a world-class, thriving, livable urban center. It is important to understand that this plan is not a major departure from the way that we have grown since the last central city plan, which laid the framework for the success that I've just described. The existing and proposed height limits in Portland's central city are modest compared with the height limits in most U.S. central cities. While it's possible to create density with the uniform application of 6 to 8-story buildings, flexibility in height and density across the central city is critical to facilitate population growth in the places that provide access to high-capacity transit, public services, urban amenities, and the region's highest concentration of jobs. New limits on growth in the central city will have a dramatic impact on housing affordability throughout the city. Commissioner Fish mentioned the displacement that occurred as a result of the Albina plan, and I would caution that this kind of displacement is not going to be stopped with new limitations on development. In fact, it will likely accelerate as it has in San Francisco, a city that is adding 30,000 to 40,000 new jobs a year, but fewer than 7,000 housing units a year. The result is that more central city workers have a long commute from the suburbs. Many of the people who have traditionally lived in the central city and inner northwest neighborhoods are young professionals, a group that is not well represented among those testifying this evening. I was lucky to live in Goose Hollow when I returned to Portland in 2006, but the cost of a walk-up one-bedroom unit at the edge of the central city has doubled in the course of the last decade. So young professionals like my 24-year-old cousin get a few roommates and they pack into inner northeast Portland homes that might otherwise be occupied by families. Please consider this demographic as well as future residents not yet here who may never be here if we begin a process of lowering expectations about concentrating growth in the central city. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hello. Wow, marathon session. I'm Peggy Moretti. I'm Executive Director of Restore Oregon, and Restore Oregon is a nonprofit whose statewide mission is to save Oregon's historic places and promote livable communities. We did engage quite a bit in the West Quadrant planning process, particularly focusing on our historic districts, and we do appreciate the thoughtful process and contributions of time and talent through that whole thing. I'm going to try not to repeat things that have been already shared many, many, many times here, but I think we have definitely can identify some themes, recurring themes from the testimony tonight, and we definitely share a number of those concerns. So I'm going to kind of zero in on a couple of things. First of all, Skidmore Old Town. We very much applaud and heartily support the retention of the 75-foot height limit on this National Landmark District, and that the design guidelines appear to be poised for passage that have been long overdue or long put on a back burner. And I think now we need to, for that district, really adopt the right policies and incentives to stimulate infill development, the compatible infill development in the Skidmore District, which would certainly include shifting parking from surface lots into structured parking that will support both the historic buildings and that new infill development and help alleviate the need to dig underground parking, which jacks up costs. In Japantown, Chinatown, and we do have two separate historic districts there who have some differences, we actually have one of Oregon's most endangered places in Japantown, Chinatown. That's the Wong Laundry Building, and it is a representation, I think, of a number of properties that are going through demolition by neglect. And that district includes such a rich cultural history whose story is not being very well told right now. So as we look at how we kind of get from some of the aspirational, very generally stated goals of the plan, we're hoping we can get down to some specifics that will specifically incentivize the historic preservation and appropriate infill development. And we would love to see the city consider, as part of that effort to get into the more granular implementation, that we might want to consider an ordinance that would penalize demolition by neglect, because I do believe there are property owners who are using that strategy to get around demolition review and demolition denial. And, as we potentially raise height limits there, that just creates an increased incentive to engage in demolition by neglect. So as we put pressures on the land value underneath the historic properties, we have to be, I think, putting in place counterbalancing incentives for the preservation of the historic properties, or you're going to create an untenable tension between those two things. And we would support the Japantown Chinatown Neighborhood Association recommendations that challenge that idea of boosting the height limit there right along Burnside, with the exception of Block 33, where that would seem to be perhaps an appropriate exception. So I just think in general, as we look at the West End and all the testimony that has come in today, we have to acknowledge that every time we raise height, we are in some way sealing the doom of historic properties unless there are counterbalancing incentives that will help create some financial, weight on that side of the scale for rehabilitation. We appreciate that the city, in that regard, we appreciate the city's support of the Revitalized Main Street Act that Restore Oregon has. It's Senate Bill 565 that would create a historic rehabilitation fund, which provides a 25% rebate on the cost of rehabilitation of historic buildings. And we ask you to advocate strongly for it because we're going to be in a tough fight for that, but interest is definitely mounting in Salem. And we would also really urge the city to get serious about incentives for seismic upgrades of our historic buildings. That is often 20 or 25% of the cost of rehabilitation, and it is often the stumbling block that is keeping people from moving forward with rehabilitation. And then I have one final personal comment. As we densify our city and we jam more and more people per square foot, I think we can definitely challenge assumptions that height does not always create livability. It isn't always the only way to create density. And where we do have to go tall, I think it's really time to raise our game on design in this city. I don't know how quite we want to tackle that, but I think we need to set some better, higher standards for design that aren't just about doing something that's green and inoffensive. We can step it up here so that that the new buildings that are going to go in, that are going to create this density, really do continue to tell the story of Portland, that when they live next to historic buildings, they enhance the story of that historic place, and that create that, keeping Portland, certainly there's a big role for design to play in that going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good evening.
My name is Roger Leachman. I'm a resident of Goose Hollow. I live on Southwest Vista. I was just elected in November to the board of the Goose Hollow Foothills League directors. Fielding's written, "It is a trite but true observation that examples work more forcibly on the mind than precepts." And that certainly applies to the examples given by North American Building, vis-a-vis, for instance, the precepts galumphing through the pages of the West Quadrant's plan committee prose. I was privileged and lucky to be an undergraduate in Philadelphia in the 60s, to see daily from my dorm room Louis Kahn's medical research building, to spend halcyon days downtown where no building could be higher than William Penn's hat on the top of that beautiful city hall. That changed in 1984. Philly sold its birthright for a mess of pottage. Let us not do likewise. From my living room window, I look at 735 St. Clair, 22 stories of architectural tedium, and the ugliest building, bar none, in Goose Hollow. Completely out of scale and out of character with everything around it, there's no getting rid of it. It's much, much easier to get rid of 1890s Victorian houses, of course, as not only Goose Hollow has experienced. My own unit is 6 stories. I know many of my neighbors, and we socialize and interact. I feel a part of my neighborhood in much the same way as when I was a homeowner in single-family neighborhoods in Virginia and Minnesota. Vertical sprawl creates towers of psychological and social isolation. You do not have to be a devotee of Professor Putnam of Harvard to understand that when the social fabric is abraded by isolation and detachment, a sense of community erodes or becomes virtually non-existent. And exactly that happens in impersonal towers, which become like the infamous projects in Chicago, regardless of the income group inhabiting them. A trailer park has more community and connectedness. When we at the neighborhood and city level, or at state and federal for that matter, rend the social fabric, we do so at our peril. An irony of this very flawed West Quadrant process and draft is that it has created community among those of us who came together from our different neighborhoods and backgrounds. Because we care about our neighborhoods and our city, their present and their future. And I think we are not going to cease to struggle and to care.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I think we have a couple more still
the
here.
The last three who signed up were Timothy Moore, Jim Winkler, and Simon Jaworski.
No one else? All right, you two gentlemen get the last word. And thank you for being willing to wait this long to have it.
You're welcome.
It's a long day.
Oh, ahead, one like. More companion. Go ahead, please.
All right, my name is Simon, and, you know, Portland had an original plan back in the turn of the last 20th century where people would work out in the rural areas people would live out in the rural areas and work downtown. I think we should keep that plan because that plan has always worked. You know, it was environmentally sustainable, you know, and it was very successful. You know, I think people should Beaverton Round. If you look at the Max Line Beaverton Round, there's a beautiful condominium out there out in Beaverton. It's right on the Max station. There's restaurants around it, and it's a direct line to downtown. Now, there's vacant land all around there, all around the Max Line. They could build all the 100, 200-story condos out there, you know, and we don't need any more of this density, you know. We don't need any more housing, you know. We don't, especially any more affluent people that are going to change the demographics. You know, they're not going to take transit like they're saying. The Northwest neighborhood is a proof of that. Along that streetcar around the Hoyt area, Pearl District, that area is flooded with cars. We've got too much congestion, way too much overcrowding, and it's getting very bad for the air. I like what Commissioner said. Commissioner Fish said we should preserve what we have downtown, and the big building that's going up Nordstrom is completely ugly. We need to save the downtown area for business space. That is prime business space for people to go shopping. I love to go shopping downtown, but if you're going to build nothing but residential down, where are people going to shop? I live over on 12th and Clay, and the people in my building take a bus all the way to the Winco Shopping Center out in Beaverton because there's no cheap place to shop down other than Safeway, and they're not all that cheap. All the rest of the stores like Zupan's, those are for more affluent people. They can't afford it where we have. We don't need any more biking paths. As you can see, biking in the paths, they hardly ever get used. It's a big waste of money. Like the earlier plan, we need to use more mass transit, build up along the mass transit. Build the condominiums in our residential areas like the Canton neighborhoods and Hollywood districts where it's all residential. Okay, you have an urban both growth boundary plan. Don't make it in the business district. Make it in already residential districts like, for example, the Canton neighborhoods. Build the condominiums out there. Connect them with light rail. Connect them with a good bus service. That'll be fine. We can't. Transit. I don't like what Brian says about increasing the campus. Oregon Health Sciences in Portland. PCC is a good example of that. They took out a much needed grocery store over in Northeast Portland and built their campuses all over it. And there's no place for people to shop or buy groceries or anything, and destroyed the neighborhood.
Thank you very much. I want you to wrap up because we're
okay. I'm just saying that there's really no proof that this density really helps economic growth very much. The only thing that really seems to help the growth is mass transit because it helped build the store downtown Macy's, and the only way to help mass transit is by increased service.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Okay, sir. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. My name is Timothy Moore, and I am a Goose Hollow resident, and I'm also a homeowner, middle-income homeowner, and really happy to be part of the community And I am an avid bicyclist and drive less than 1,000 miles a year because I live in a central Portland place where I have the benefit of being able to walk the things I really appreciate. And so I love it here. And I want to acknowledge just a couple things that have been said along the way and move on to some other points. I want to acknowledge the comments from a lot of people. I think that you know, while there's a lot of controversy around the whole question of building heights and things like that, I'm glad that people are raising the issues. I'm glad that they're speaking up about it. I particularly appreciate what was said by Steve Pinger and Michael Mahaffey from the Urban Land Institute, the evidence-based design approach. I think you guys really have your work cut out for you. A little bit more background on me. I was involved in the U.S. Green Building Council since its inception, since 2001, and was a part of creating the LEED Green Building Rating System. I have been involved with the neighborhood. I have been involved with the Vision Realization Committee for 3.5 years now, and am currently on the Goose Hollow Foothills League Board, although I don't pretend to be speaking for the board at this time. My comments are my own comments. And I've been on that board for a year now. And I just want to say that from my experience, I felt like the Vision Realization Committee was a very well-conducted committee, and we came up with a lot of great things. And I'm really excited about, you know, even though I think you guys really have your work cut out for you, and I'm glad people are raising the building height issues, and I think you're going to have to figure out how to balance questions about density, which are important, climate issues, and you know, on the other hand, all the issues that have been raised by the concerns about building height. I think there are lots of examples in the world of how density can be achieved with lower building heights. We all, you know, anybody who's been to Copenhagen, Denmark, loves the place, and there's hardly a building over 7 stories. Now, granted, we have different challenges today that we have to balance with, so that's not the reality that we're faced with today. But I want to make some other points that I think are really important and salient.
Make them quickly if you can.
Yes, I will. And that is that we created the Vision Realization Committee, spent more than 2.5 years creating our principles document, and I'm really glad to see that a lot of what the good work that we did, including many residents on that committee, did find its way into the West Quadrant Plan. And just to highlight a couple things that I think are important that you guys asked about, one of them is Jefferson Street as a main street. I think that's a naturally evolving thing, much more than 18th. And the planning of the city really needs to not only let that happen, but reinforce it. It's too easy for that to be treated by people with automobiles as a glorified ramp to the Highway 26. I think that the things that Mary Valent brought up about Burnside and improving the crossings of Burnside and not letting Burnside be forgotten, West Burnside, those are really important, and I don't think the plan really, it's a timid address of that as well. And the last one is that I think you guys asked about the cap on 405 and the reconnection of downtown with the West neighborhoods to the West, I think, is a huge deal, and probably it's inappropriate and too expensive to try to cap the whole thing, but doing some strategic caps around Lincoln High School and around the light rail and things like that may be really valuable. And I don't think that the city has to tote the entire thing, the entire bill for that, but I also don't think it makes sense to just wait and see if, you know, private development comes up with something. I think that there's a role for the city in encouraging that and making it happen.
Thank you.
That's all I have to say.
Great. Thank you very much. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Reza Farhudi. I am a resident of the Pearl District, and like this gentleman here, I also really enjoy living in the Central City. I want to reiterate a few points that were mentioned earlier in today's testimony. You know, the people who are predisposed to supporting this plan are not represented well in this process, probably because they have day jobs. And, you know, I tried to get here as soon as I could after work just to be able to speak to you tonight. The generational divide from today's testimony is very clear. Millennials have shown a clear preference to living in dense, vibrant urban cores with a number of amenities that are in convenient walking or biking distance, what you may call a 20-minute neighborhood. it's incredibly convenient for people who already live here to want things to stay the same. It takes strong leadership and a bold vision to fight for the future generations who want to live here. And it's up to us to ensure that the housing supply and affordability allows them to move here, here as in the central city, and not on the fringes of our urban sprawl. And therefore, I urge you to pass the West Quadrant Plan as proposed by city staff and the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, I say please all. Don't support the West Quadrant Plan.
Gotcha. Thank you very much. Okay. We have staff available, but we also have had a long hearing. So my suggestion is we get staff back up here briefly. We leave somebody else out? I'm sorry. Okay.
Thanks for sticking around to hear us.
You bet. Thank you for sticking around as yourself. So appreciate it. Yes, sorry. Didn't mean to knock off the bottom of the list there.
Somebody had to leave for their work. So I'm not Tim Block. I'm Tina. But I'm going to be speaking on behalf of Tim Block. He asked me to read a letter he wrote from the Hotel Deluxe. Good evening. I'm Tim Block, general manager of the Hotel Deluxe, which is home to Gracie's Restaurant and the Driftwood Room. We are located at Southwest 15th Avenue and Southwest Yamhill, the area often referred to in Goose Hollow as the Flats. Our owner, the owner of the Hotel Deluxe, recently purchased the vacant lot across the street from the hotel on Southwest 15th with the intention of developing it under the zoning and property rights as they currently exist. I was a member of the Goose Hollow Foothills League Vision Realization Committee for several years and regularly attended the monthly meetings. We hosted the monthly meetings of the VRC at the Hotel Deluxe from September 2012 to February 2014, and we also hosted all of the Goose Hollow neighborhood charrettes in December of 2012. Those gatherings were well attended by Goose Hollow residents, business owners, and property owners. I fully stand by the open and inclusive nature of the process in both of these meetings and in the results that it yielded. There currently is a lack of a robust business community in the Goose Hollow area, particularly on weekends. And the hope is that the new plan will encourage the building of new residences in the area immediately surrounding the hotel, but really throughout all of Goose Hollow, leading to a better business environment, additional businesses, amenities, maybe some parking, and other things which our guests and our residents may enjoy. I urge you to adopt the West Quadrant Plan as proposed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, Susan and Carl, why don't you come up? I know Joe will be back in a minute. My suggestion is this, one, that we set some dates here, and that is I want to keep my recommendation is we keep the record open until the 13th to allow people to continue to send in information and perspectives, and that we set a date of the 25th for the council to have council deliberations and further response from staff on requests that we're going to make in the meantime. The meantime could start now, but doesn't need to end now. So if there are things that council members want to put on your to-do list at the moment, we can do that. But we can also follow up by a memorandum to each other and to you after today if we're too tired to remember everything that we want to ask. But for those that are still ready to do so, I want to open the opportunity for that.
Well, I will have a list to give you and to have to discuss with you, and you have been very responsive to my requests for different kinds of maps and larger maps. I'm still struggling with what's changing. Sure. So if I could have some 11 by 17s to show
Absolutely.
The base zone heights across the district and then one that just shows proposed changes,
yep,
that would be very helpful.
And distribute those to all of us.
And that way that will inform my then suggestions, requests, discussion.
And we're happy to come any time that you want us to
come. It's a phenomenal amount of staff work and also community engagement, and thanks to everybody for all of it. It's, you know, the mayor said when he appointed me to the Planning Commission that he expects things to come to council 90% done. I think this is a great example of something which I'm really glad I didn't have to do the 90% of the work because there's a lot of it in here.
Exactly. Okay. Commissioner Novick, anything for the moment?
No, except that I kind of feel compelled to complain about the idea that all anybody seems to care about is height.
Well said.
Thank you, Steve. I think we needed that. anything that you need to put on the table for us other than, that, again, I want to make sure that not only the three of us, but also that our two colleagues have a chance in the next few days to lob requests to you. My request is that we make sure we copy one another on those requests so that we know what's being asked for and that you distribute responses to all five members of the council so we can keep this thread going of this discussion this evening.
Actually, Mayor, we got scolded by the city attorney that we're not supposed to copy each other on internal emails.
Well, so we'll send,
the staff can send it to us, but we're not allowed to send it to
all right, I'm not going
to
violate the open meetings law.
We try to keep public records.
All right. Therefore, do distribute your responses to all of us.
So we'll send our request to you, and you'll resend the replies to everybody.
I'd suggest two things. One, if it's okay, and then we'll send a note out to Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fish within a week to get your questions in so that we can make sure that we are doing this. Obviously, if you have another question after that, we'll be responsive, but just to get this, to keep it moving. The other is picking a date for a final vote because there's many, many interested parties, and I would suggest potentially the 25th of February.
Correct. That's what I said. I said let's take the 13th for closing the record request to you in a week, and the 25th for council deliberations.
If that
except that there will be amendments.
There
and
probably
we'll have
are likely
to
be amendments, so it's going to be the 25th and the following
week. And the following week, okay.
So we would have another public hearing just on the amendments on the 25th of February and then vote on it the first week of March.
Okay.
All right.
Sure.
All
right. Okay.
Great.
Does that
work
for everybody?
Yes.
Thank you.
So we'll set those dates, and thank you all for your attendance this evening. The hearing is closed, and we are recessed until tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So.
Mm-hmm. I just was thinking that, too. That
you
there's
one staff person, me and one staff person.
Yeah, and there are actually some people that we heard from today that I wanted to talk more with.
Yeah.
There's some big stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You have 30 seconds.
Sure.
No overtime.
Oh, look at the big map. Look at this.
Big map.
Oh, look at this.
Wow.
Oh,
I was doing
okay.
And
it, what's the, oh, the redevelopable. So is this two copies of this map?
You know, what is that? This actually belongs to me.
Oh, okay. I'll see what I get from the Planning Bureau if it turns out that I, honestly.
And I did turn not the whole map, but just this much of it.
Right. Yes. One thing that I've been thinking about, we have a no net loss of housing, so when we're moving to commercial, we have to find the housing. I wonder if we could have a no net loss of affordable housing. So then even if, because some of the buildings are historic, some of them are old and nasty and not worth saving, right?
So,
yes. So, but when they're not preserved, we need to make sure that we're not then building fancy and affordable things. Well, they can be fancy, but they have to be affordable. Thank you very much.
But interestingly, they're turning. They're now rehabbing some of these older buildings.
Yeah.
They're kind of medium, they're fine.
Well, Commissioner Fish
with condos.
Yes.
Pretty affordable.
Well, that's good, because that's then affordable homeownership. Commissioner Fish, when he was housing commissioner, did an 11x13 project where 11 buildings by the year 2013 that we helped flip to a nonprofit from a private owner so that they didn't then become, and it, he saved hundreds of units. So something like that, I think, could be useful, too. Thank you so much for your
diligence. Thanks. We all have more work.
So you're saying February 25th after 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
Back.
I don't mind that. Yeah.
So go to